This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. I'm Riddhi, and today here we have with us Michael Bova, founder and managing director of Family Wealth Advisory. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, Riddhi. Thanks for having me.
So, Michael, I thought it'd be interesting to talk about private markets with you, which has really shifted from a niche to a much more mainstream asset class in the recent years. How's the advisor community responding to the asset class? Are you seeing some real shifts in the portfolios?
Yeah, so the private markets typically was an area of investments for wholesale clients, family offices, endowment funds. It's sort of different to the retail advisor market because of its illiquid nature. And then what's happened over time is that the advisor markets have been looking for solutions where particularly they can move their wholesale clients into some of that private market exposure. And that's kind of how it's evolved over time. So you have the kind of the close-end funds where the money's tied up and potentially locked up for 10 years, which is a bit difficult for advisors to manage in a sort of a portfolio way. And so what's happened is the private markets have started to develop these things like evergreen structures, where they're sort of semi-liquid, where you can come in and out maybe on a monthly or a quarterly redemption basis. And typically how they do that is the evergreen structure will potentially hold like cash within the fund. 10-15% of the fund will be held in cash to sort of manage some of the redemptions and liquidity. So a bit of a drag on returns, but at least it provides that semi-liquid fund.
Within private markets, whether it's credit, private equity, real estate, what is the area that's getting the most sort of traction?
Well, private credit's probably had the most amount of news and attention lately. So a lot of money did flood into private credit. So a lot of the banks post GFC and changes to regulation, you saw the sort of the private credit markets step into that space. And then typically what happened is I think some of the retail investors started to see some of the returns that some of those private credit funds were offering and became quite attracted to it. So yeah, you probably started to see some of the retail dollars going into private credit. What we're seeing now with some of the private credit is some of the funds getting withdrawn. And you're seeing some of those private credit managers starting to gate withdrawals. So one of the rules they typically put in there is that once a withdrawal meets 5% of NAV, they'll gate it. So they'll only ever sort of reach 5% of NAV. And I guess that's the challenge. So private markets can be a great solution, but a great solution when used correctly, because you really are trading away liquidity for hopefully additional return. So for some clients, that's perfect because they can afford to put money aside. Then they don't need the liquidity. They've got excess capital, intergenerational wealth, wholesale clients. The challenge is if you're putting retail dollars into these less liquid investments and the retail dollars need the money back, they need that liquidity. So they've been trading away liquidity for returns, not realizing that when they need the liquidity back, potentially they get gated and locked up. That's where it's basically you're probably making the wrong decision.
It's very interesting you mentioned the 5% NAV because we're seeing all these issues in the US private funds, right? Where a bunch of funds have put limits on withdrawal after requests have sort of risen for withdrawals recently. So do you see trouble in the private credit space? And do you think that trouble probably might be coming to Australia?
I don't know if I see trouble. I mean, I think what it's doing is it's shaking out people who probably should have been in private credit and maybe those that shouldn't have. And we come back to that liquidity, illiquidity argument. Probably part of the problem also is there's been so much money flooding into private credit that you've got so much money chasing deals and then maybe potentially some of the deals aren't great. On top of that, you've got the whole AI change and its potential impact on SaaS companies. And so a lot of private credit companies potentially may have been lending into that SaaS space. And I think investors are starting to get nervous because they're seeing some of the share prices down 30%. And then they're thinking, oh, are these companies going to be able to repay their loans? So that then creates fear in the market. And then people want to start withdrawing funds. And I dare say that that's part of it. So are there potential problems within private credit? Probably. But that's why, like all investments, you want to make sure that if you are allocating to privates, You want to know why, and you want to make sure that when you're doing it, you're allocating to, I guess, the best managers that are going to deliver what you're looking for. So the best way that we tend to do that is we work with an asset consultant, one of the largest asset consultants in the world, and their role is to do all the DD on selecting the private managers to deliver for that part of the portfolio.
So at Family Wealth Advisory, you only look at wholesale clients, is that correct?
No, we do retail and wholesale.
Okay.
So we run in terms of managed accounts for our retail clients. So Mercer is our asset consultant. And so we run an SMA solution for our retail clients, which is fully liquid, fully listed. And it's a great solution. But for our wholesale clients who have the ability to access some of that illiquidity, they don't need access to the portfolio on a daily basis, monthly basis, quarterly basis. We can take part of that portfolio and allocate towards privates. And so Mercer will run on the private side, wholesale side, will operate typically through an MDA. And on the retail side, we'll operate through an SMA.
Can you explain the MDA side of things a little bit? Because the full form of it and how does it work, basically?
So the SMA, I would, at a high level, it's kind of like a financial product that sits on a platform, but it's really tax efficient and you can, and the underlying investor owns the underlying investments within the portfolio. As opposed to owning units in a unit trust, which owns the underlying. So it's much more tax efficient and great visibility because you can in-specie the investments out of the SMA and just own them directly. For the MDA, it's slightly different. It's more like an agreement between the client and the advisor or the MDA provider. So there's an agreement. So it's more like a service, whereas the SMA sits more like a financial product.
When a client comes into your office, how do you decide, it can be a retail or wholesale client, how do you decide that this would be a good fit for some, for putting some of their money in private markets? And how, on the other side, how do you decide that this client would probably not be suitable for a private market allocation?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. So I start the conversation with, if the client has excess capital that we feel is unlikely to be needed in the short, medium, and potentially longer term, it opens up the potential to have the private market conversation. So I normally start with the liquidity. It probably also starts with, do you need additional returns to achieve all your objectives? And then, so once we've gone through the whole planning process, if a client is in that position where they can afford to put some capital aside into less liquid markets to get a slightly higher return or risk-adjusted return, then it's worth having that conversation. But it's a conversation where we really do focus on the trade-off. So they need to really be aware that to basically chase that slightly higher return, that they're prepared to trade that liquidity away. Very important, because emotions when it comes to investments are very strong. And you'll see, particularly in the retail space, when the markets get very scary, a lot of people will go to cash, which is absolutely the worst thing you can do. But it's liquid and they have that ability. Or if they need the money for something else to go and buy a bigger house or whatever it is, it's liquid and they can get the money out. Once it's in that kind of less liquid environment, it's harder for them to make that decision. So really the conversation starts with, are they prepared to trade the liquidity away? And you've really got to drill into a stress test environment. So when I have the conversation with clients, sure, some of our wholesale privates are monthly redemptions, quarterly redemptions, potentially 12-month redemptions, but under a stressed environment, we work under the scenario that the privates are going to get locked up for 2 years. So are you prepared to put this percentage of your portfolio aside and not be able to access it for 2 years? And if you can make peace with that, we can continue the conversation around, then potentially this might be a right fit for you.
How do the clients usually respond? Are they open to it, or is this something that sort of scares them off? What's the usual response by clients?
Look, it's probably mixed. I think the majority of them, once they wrap their head around it, tend to lean into it. So it's like a term deposit. You can put cash in a bank and earn a certain interest, or you can lock your money up for 3 months and get slightly higher interest, or 6 months and get slightly higher interest, unless it's a falling interest rate environment, in which case you won't. But generally, and it's the same conversation with the privates. If you're prepared to lock your money up for a little bit more, then potentially you can access these private market opportunities, which will give you slightly higher risk-adjusted return.
Ideally, what percentage of your portfolio would you think should go into private market allocation?
Well, that's a very good question. And that's probably a conversation best had with the asset consultants. Mm. So we, once again, work with Mercer. It will come down to each individual client and what their tolerance is. But I would say anywhere from 0 to 40% when you're looking at alternatives and privates in terms of an overall portfolio, if you want to maximize the best risk-adjusted return. Now, where you sit on that continuum is going to be different for each individual investor.
There's also this whole debate about wholesale and retail, and I know we covered a little bit of it. Do you think the advisor space is open for retail clients to get into private markets, or is that something that is still a bit far off and something that advisors are still not comfortable to get into yet?
So I can only sort of speak for ourselves.
Yeah.
We treat our retail clients as retail clients, and we treat our wholesale clients as wholesale clients. We wouldn't typically move a retail client into private market, even if they had the capacity to do so. Some platforms do allow you to do it, particularly with those evergreen structures. But I think it's really important that, one, they not only trade off the illiquidity, but they understand the difference in the product. And so it's a slightly more complex product as well. So I think they've got to be able to wrap their heads around both of those. So I think the tools are allowing advisors to potentially get retail investors more and more into private market opportunities. That really is a decision for each advisor and their clients to make. But for our firm's perspective, yeah, we'll only ever really move our wholesale clients into that private market exposure.
Makes sense. And just the last question on risks. I know we talked about illiquidity risks. What are the other sort of risks that you see that advisors should be aware of when they get into this space?
So I think the biggest thing in privates is the return dispersions are much bigger.
Mm.
So there's no point trading away liquidity if you're on the wrong side of that return dispersion. So we would only ever do it working with the largest asset consultant, so that it improves our chances of being on the right side of that return dispersion risk. So I think there's a broader range of return outcomes in the private market space. So you've just got to make sure that you're doing a lot of DD, you're making sure you're selecting the right funds, and you're constructing a portfolio the same way you do in the retail space. It's like a recipe coming together. This fund is good, but does it work well with this fund? And does it work well with this fund? And the same on the wholesale MDA portfolio. So we've got the listed components, we've got the alts, and then we've got the private equity, private credit, private infrastructure. How does it all blend together? And how does each individual private manager's style blend with the entire portfolio? So the same discipline applies, the same DD in terms of the selecting the right managers. And I guess coming back to your private credit, you want to make sure that the managers have probably been through cycles. Because lending money is one thing, but seeing and getting that money back through a cycle is quite a different skill set. But that all comes back to that DD and the asset consultants that you work with.
That was a great conversation. Thank you so much, Michael, for coming and chatting with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.